Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Cinematic Universe, the podcast that does for comic book movies what Justice League does for uniting the I'm not sure. I'm Jack Cunningham, and joining me to help make sense of the comics behind the movies are...
Seb Patrick.
And James Hunt.
We'll skip the latest comic book movie and TV news this week, as we've been doing for the past month or so. We'll update you eventually, guys, I promise. And instead dive straight into our spoiler-filled discussion of Geoff Johns' 2017 movie, Justice League. Is that right? I think that's the closest to being right. But before any of that, I'm going to ask Seb and James to explain to me a comic book concept that, as a movie fan, I just don't understand. And this week, I would like you to explain to me, for reasons that I'm sure will be very clear, is it Madrox the Multiple Man?
Yes. Yeah, it is.
Oh, God, I'm so excited, you guys. I know nothing about him, but I'm so excited. Tell me all about him. Why should I be excited?
I've got to say, just before James explains about Madrox, that, like, of all the roles that you could give to... Do I want to say his name, or are we building up to that?
Yeah, the Franco.
All the roles you could give to James Franco... A role where there could be hundreds of him on screen at once is like the most James Franco thing you could possibly imagine.
Oh, yes. I don't know much about it, but just the idea of this weird superhero being played by James Franco, I'm disappointed that he's not doing this on like The Flash or something, because that seems like something that James Franco would sign up to do, but that it would also be the wrong universe. But you know what I mean.
So... I mean, do you know anything about Madrox at the moment?
No, right. So is he the character from X-Men 3, or was that a different guy?
That was a cameo Madrox, yeah.
Right.
Although that was a very kind of old version of the character. Because, like, when he was introduced, his gimmick was he could create duplicates of himself, and then later sort of, like, I think if he got hit, he created a new duplicate, and if he touched the other duplicates, they got reabsorbed.
Right.
And at some point further down the line, they revised his pitch into... Every new duplicate has a different aspect of his personality sort of at the forefront. So, like, he creates these other duplicates, and they might be, like, the, you know, coward version of him, or the super intelligent version of him, or the evil version of him. And he sent them all off into the world to learn different skills. Because that's the other thing. When he reabsorbs them, he gets their sort of experiences reintegrated back into him.
Okay.
So there was this kind of, there was this solo series where he was like a noir detective, but also he kept encountering other versions of himself who were coming back and like depositing new knowledge and skills in him.
Wonderful. This all sounds
it's
great.
It's just so James Franco.
it's a bit like if in Rick and Morty, like all of the different versions of Rick from all the alternate dimensions were just the same guy, and they kept sort of coming back and being like, well, I'm done having my life now. I'm going to deposit my memories and experiences.
And is the character an asshole? You. Like, what's his general vibe?
Not an asshole. I'm trying to think. He's a kind of, like, Peter David wrote the Madrox miniseries and later the X-Factor comic, where he was kind of a wannabe detective. Like, he's a bit of a loser, but also a kind of moral one.
Okay.
Like, he's not hyper-competent, but he isn't also... He's not an idiot. Like, it's a really kind of nuanced character, and like that whole comic was really good. Okay. So,
are you guys up to date on The Flash, or are either of you still watching The Flash?
No, quite far behind on it.
Okay, so they've introduced Elongated Man this season. He's been in two episodes.
Of course, they were doing that. Yeah,
and the performance is delightful. I'm really enjoying the brief amount. I don't know who the guy they've cast, but he's like a young Jim Carrey, and it's super enjoyable so far. But like, it sounds like maybe that's a similar kind of character, possibly.
He's not as jokey as Elongated Man, is he? Really?
He is quite self-deprecating, but he's not like...
He's not goofy,
no.
Right. Okay, so
the thing is, he might be goofy, but he doesn't play up to it. Like, he tries not to be.
Should we talk about, just as a tangent to this, this kind of exciting new direction that Fox have pivoted into? which... I guess there was no one ever like stood up and started shouting about it. We didn't have Simon Kinberg or Lauren Shuler Donner saying, "We're ripping up the playbook. We're going to take things in this new direction." But just quietly, outside of the core X-Men franchise, kind of I remember when X-Men Apocalypse came out, and we were just like, "Oh, did it look for a hot second like X-Men was going to be exciting?" And now we're back to this dross, and yet everything else that they're doing.
They've done something that's really unusual for a major studio, and especially for a major studio working in this genre, is they've looked at what worked and what
and
was
got it
successful,
right.
And they've learned the right lessons.
And have decided
to do more stuff like that without just copying what that is.
Yeah, they watched Deadpool and went, filmmaker-led, unique tone. Like, that's what works about that film, not the fact that it was 18 certificate.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not at all, from the look of it, I'm not at all interested in New Mutants. But the fact that they will have done Deadpool and then Logan and New Mutants and now potentially this Madrox film, it's like, yeah, not only is that learning the right lessons from the success of Deadpool and Logan, it's pretty much what the X-Men comics have been doing since, like, the 1980s.
Yeah, exactly.
Branching out into different genres.
It's the thing that ever since, like, Avengers came out and, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe came out, like, I've been sitting there going, like, why don't Fox realise they are sitting on an absolute gold mine of concepts?
Yeah.
And instead they keep trotting out the same, like...
Let's do a line.
Xavier versus Magneto, like, sci-fi superhero.
With interesting characters lost in an ensemble.
Yeah, exactly. And now they're actually doing like, oh, look, we've got all these varied characters who basically can stand alone, don't require much setup, and can be plugged into a greater franchise. Like, finally.
Is there the chance that Sony are doing that as well?
No.
Why not?
Because Sony haven't got the... Sony haven't looked at what's been successful for Sony and tried to do the same thing. They've looked at what's been successful for Fox
Nothing has been successful for Sony.
But they don't have the characters and concepts.
Yeah, the thing is, what they have is a lot of...
X-Men world.
They have a ton of Spider-Man offcuts, and all of these characters are defined in opposition to Spider-Man. Mm. Like, X-Men... The X-Men characters tend to be created as a team, and... all have their own sort of backstory and origin and ability to support a concept. And the fact that they're mutants isn't particularly interesting. It's just that's why they're in the X-Men franchise instead of the Avengers franchise.
I would compare what Sony are doing with Fox with what DC are doing with Marvel, which is, ooh, we like what you've done there. We want to do that, but we're not going to put the work into actually making it successful up top. We're just going to hope that the same approach will work for
but
us.
What if, what
I would,
if Venom,
I would
what
compare
if Venom
it with what
is
Warner
their
are
Deadpool,
doing with then? Harry Potter.
What if Venom is their Deadpool? That's
great.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just think there's
it will be.
maybe we could be sat here in 2-3 years' time going like, oh my god, I can't wait for this superior foes of Spider-Man movie that they're doing. It sounds so exciting. they're just trying to do different things with every movie. You know, maybe it will happen. But yeah, hey, a James Franco on his own superhero movie. I say on his own, a James Franco with James Franco and James Franco and James Franco superhero movie.
Do you know what I'd really love is if they cast Dave Franco as just one of the duplicates.
Amazing. Okay, so hey, look, we got a little bit of news in there for you as well. So that's Madrox the Multiple Man, who I learned was originally almost called Xerox. What a missed trick that
he was.
Yes, oh, amazing. Okay, well, let's move on now to our discussion of Justice League. We'll start off with our spoiler-free discussion and then move into a spoiler-filled chat. We will flag the spoilers before we get there. Jokes aside, this was directed, if what people at Warner Brothers and DC say is to be believed, about 80 to 90% by Zack Snyder, with about 10 to 20% of the film being replaced or added to with Joss Whedon reshoots. It will be interesting to see whether that is actually the case, because I think maybe that this film is a shorter film than we would have seen if Zack Snyder had directed it as well, because I think maybe 10 to 20% of this film might be Zack Snyder's, but that we maybe lost a similar percentage from the original.
Might be Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon's, yeah, sorry. Yeah. That's hence my stumbling over that. So, guys, spoiler-free, what did you think of Justice League?
Just before we get started, don't include this bit in the podcast, but has the check from Disney cleared yet? Just before we, you know, say our opinions.
Oh, dear.
I guess that sums it up, right?
Well, actually, no. I mean, that's just me making a crack about what DCEU fans think, because I'm not going to go in and just... I'll leave this to you, James. I'm not going to go in and just go, this was terrible, because it's not. No, okay. It's not terrible. It's just there. It's just
that's the problem, isn't it?
And all of this build up. It's just a film that's... I mean, I don't often kind of talk about my opinions immediately after seeing them on Twitter if I know we're going to do the podcast straight away. But a phrase I used was aggressively mediocre.
Yeah.
And what I said was, you know, I don't think, apart from one moment which we'll come to, which again I did talk about on Twitter, I said I don't think it does anything egregiously bad. You know, it doesn't have piss in a jar the way Batman v Superman did, but equally, it doesn't have anything remotely interesting about it.
So let's. So you two, obviously, I hated Batman v Superman. I just thought it was an unrelenting mess. You guys saw at least some merit in it. So how does this stack up against Batman v Superman for you? Because I think we're all going to agree, it's not as good as Wonder Woman. That's obvious. It's
no.
It's better than Suicide Squad. And we don't need to talk about Man of Steel again. So where does it stack up against Batman v Superman for you guys?
I mean, it's definitely better than Batman v Superman for me. I'm not sure I had as much fun watching it.
I would agree with that. I think objectively, you cannot argue that it's a worse film than Batman v Superman. But I don't. After Batman v Superman, for all of its problems, I thought, oh, it's going to be quite interesting to potentially rewatch that. I've got no interest in rewatch, because this doesn't even have like set pieces that I would be interested in. Little isolated 2-minute sequences that I'd be interested to see on their own again. It's just. It doesn't reach for anything. And no. So it doesn't fail at reaching for lofty ambitions, because it doesn't have them.
I mean,
maybe it had them in an earlier version, but it doesn't. This film just feels like it's only concerned with getting in and out and staying alive. Like,
doing as little damage as possible.
Exactly.
I mean, there are two or three things in it where I was like, oh, that was really good. And there are two or three things in it where I was like, that was terrible. And the rest of it is just like a video game cutscene.
But none of those, I don't think any of those bits were as good as the best bits of Batman v Superman, and none of the bad bits were as bad as the worst bits either. I think there's a sequence of about 20 minutes where it's about as enjoyable as any of these films have been outside of Wonder Woman, but even then, it's not like, oh, wow, this looks fantastic. You know, the stuff that I think is good is usually when people are standing around talking, rather than anything that it does as a superhero film.
Yeah, so, yeah, I agree with you. I think it is... It's so obviously a better film than Batman v Superman, because Batman v Superman is a mess. But do you know what? I kind of wanted it to try and be more like Batman v Superman, and that's a strange thing to say, but I guess what I mean there is I would have liked to see Zack Snyder at least be able to deliver a vision. Like, so that might be a vision that I really didn't like, but these films had their fans. They had some fans. And this film, I think, for anyone
oh boy,
who enjoys... for anyone that enjoys the Marvel Cinematic Universe way of doing things, this film comes off as a pale imitation. And for anyone who has enjoyed the DCEU up to this point,
it's a
compromise, and it's a disappointment because, I mean, I've seen kind of like, and the fan reaction to this is fascinating online, but, you know, DC fans saying like blaming Joss Whedon for everything that's bad about the movie and going, you know, they've turned Batman into a quipper. And to a degree, yeah, I came out of this movie going, like, I don't think that's an incompetent movie. I think it's fine, but I don't really feel like I know much about any of those characters or really want to see more of them outside of this movie. Because, I mean, like, even I think if I'd seen Wonder Woman in just this film, I'd have gone like, she's fine, but what's her deal? What does she want? What does she do? There's just none of that, really. And I think a compromised Zack Snyder movie, potentially even a bad Zack Snyder movie, is at least more interesting. Because we could have sat here for hours and hours and hours after Batman v Superman and, like, agreed or disagreed or argued or tried to unpick that. I don't know what we're going to talk about for the next hour or so. We will.
What is really striking is that it does not feel like either a Zack Snyder movie or a Joss Whedon movie. Now, on the latter point, I'm still not sure what a Joss Whedon movie really feels like, but it just doesn't seem to have either of their DNA in it. And, like, the only point at which it really felt like a Zack Snyder movie to me was right at the start in the opening montage when there's a bit, they're showing how bad, and this isn't really spoilers, so I'm keeping it in this section, but they're kind of showing how bad the world is after Superman's died, and some thugs, like some racist thugs, are kicking over some stuff outside a shop, and it's done in slow motion. It takes about 30 seconds to show a bloke kicking over a stand, and it's like, this is a Zack Snyder film. That's the only point that it felt like a Zack Snyder movie. And the bits when it was showing close-ups of Wonder Woman's arse did feel quite Zack Snyder.
There was quite a lot of arse in this film, wasn't there?
It really emphasized the difference between this and Wonder Woman.
I'm sure I saw more of her arse than her face.
Yeah. Like, even when she was fully clothed, like, even when she wasn't, when she was Diana, not when she was Wonder Woman.
Yeah, like,
it took every opportunity to shoot from that height and that angle.
It was weird. I had, unfortunately, not the best view of this, because I was, like, three rows back in quite a small cinema screen. And so I was kind of, like, you know, slightly neck craned for the whole time. And I was like, is it just where I'm sitting, or is this film shooting a lot of stuff from, like, very low angles looking up at the characters? And after a while, I was like, no, it definitely is. And it was, yeah, I think it didn't help in that regard.
There was a point, actually, where I noticed that, and I thought, I wonder if they're doing that to, like, emphasize the stature of these characters as, like, living gods. And then I was like, oh, actually, it's because if they do that, they can, like, get right under her skirt.
I don't know how intentional it is, but I think, you know, it's just definitely very pronounced when you compare it to the way that Patty Jenkins was able to show the character. And I did kind of, I pointed this out in the trailer, like, almost every Justice League trailer has started with that leg sweep shot of Wonder Woman where you get a flash of her ass, and I'm like, well, we never got that in the solo movie. Like, just never. I can't remember anything like that. I don't know. This isn't a bad movie. It's definitely not a bad movie. It's definitely watchable. And I read a really interesting review of this. A critic I really like, David Ehrlich, was talking about how kind of, it was like, it was kind of depressing as a Zack Snyder movie because it so clearly wasn't that anymore. And that it might, it was kind of uninspiring and boring in its own right. I mean, I've seen a lot of 2-star reviews for this movie, which I think is a little harsh.
I'd go 2.5 stars. So I can understand rounding down.
I think in the main, it is very solidly a 3-star movie, but I think there are a couple of things which I do think drag it down, which are more for spoilers, but one is the leaps the plot takes in the second half just to rush through
the end.
Because it's so obvious that so much plot has been cut out. And it's not even in, I've never thought I would say I wish one of these films was longer, but it genuinely, it takes such a jump and skips out so much.
It feels like it's going at one pace, doesn't it? And then about in the last half hour, it's like, that's the end of the fight. I was expecting to be lost in that CGI morass for about an hour.
Yeah, totally. Which, is in that context isn't necessarily a bad thing, but in terms of what actually happens, it absolutely is a bad thing. The other thing that I think is almost worthy of knocking a whole star off the film is the villain, who I think is very possibly the worst.
Sorry, was there a villain in this film?
Yeah, it was a bad Viggo the Carpathian impression. Again, we'll get into it in spoilers, but, if your villain makes Malekith look good, then you've really done something wrong.
He didn't do a dance like Enchantress, though, so I'm still not sure whether he's the DCEU's worst.
I mean, he did have actual lines, didn't he? And he moved. Well, he wasn't standing in one place for the entire film.
It wasn't like they completely ignored him. They showed him just enough to highlight just how crap he was.
But, every time he spoke, his mouth was not moving in a way that reflected what he was saying. This is the thing. This is why I think he's so
bad. He wasn't the only one.
He's bad in conception because choosing that villain rather than the obvious is... I mean, again, that's obviously a hangover from this was going to be 2 parts and, building up to the bigger villain. But, he's a non-entity as a figure in comics generally. He looks terrible and is executed badly and is then bad in terms of how easily they're able to defeat him. And okay, now I am getting into spoilers, but it's just impact on anything.
Okay, shall we move into spoilers? I think we've kind of given a decent reflection of what we think about this film. And we should probably dig into those spoilers. I will say that in our spoiler section, I think we're going to do just as much discussing of the film as we are going to try and pick apart at what maybe the film was before when it was just directed by Zack Snyder, what maybe the film was when it was going to be a 2-part Justice League movie, what maybe the film is telling us about the future of the DCEU, what the box office might be telling us about the future of the DCEU. And all that kind of stuff as well. So, don't worry if you watch this movie and thought, well, what are they going to talk about? It's all okay. It's all fine. It's all, there's a couple of moments we can dig into. We think there's maybe a lot more to talk about in terms of the puzzle that is Justice League. We'll put that puzzle back together.
I do think it's worth saying, I don't think we're going to just, chronologically slam every scene in the film, because there's some good stuff in here that I think is worth... talking about.
Yeah.
And especially in terms of where it came from, how it got in the film, and what it would have looked like without it.
Yeah. Okay, let's move into it then. We will play a bit of the Justice League trailer for you now, one of them. Maybe one of those where Steppenwolf references the Green Lanterns, for example. that's not in the movie.
Well, the line isn't, but they are.
Yeah. Okay. We'll be back in a second with some Justice League spoilery discussion.
Yeah. We have to be ready. You, me, the others. There's an attack coming. From far away.
Not coming, Bruce. It's already here. The others. Where are they?
Arthur Curry, the Aquaman. It's on him.
Organic and biomechatronic body parts. He's a cyborg.
You should probably move. Barry Allen.
Whoever you're looking for, it's not me. You're the Batman.
He said the Age of Heroes would never come again.
It has to.
What are your superpowers again?
I'm rich.
One thing I can tell you is you got to be free.
My turn.
Come together.
Shall we?
It's good to see you playing well with others again.
Just like a bat. I dig it.
Maybe temporary.
Yeah! Okay, you guys, I referenced the Green Lanterns just before we got to the break there. Should we talk about that? What's left of the Green Lanterns, and kind of, I think what might be an interesting place to start is what this hints about the future of the DCEU.
What this hints is that for the second time, Warners have teased a Green Lantern movie that's never going to happen.
So, like, are the Green Lanterns in the battle sequence? Is that where they are?
I think in the past battle sequence where they're talking about how the tribes of man united or whatever.
But
there is one Green Lantern.
A Green Lantern who is basically... Should we do an explainer concept for Joe?
Yeah, please.
That Green Lantern is quite clearly Abin Sur, who...
Is he the guy at the start of the Ryan Reynolds
Yes, he's
Green Lantern
Hal
movie.
Jordan's predecessor as the Green Lantern of Earth. Now, it might not be Abin Sur, it could be a different predecessor, because it's quite long.
Who looks exactly like him. Yeah.
But no, he is obviously... So the Green Lantern plot is that Abin Sur is the protector of the sector that includes Earth. So he's Earth's only Green Lantern, but people on Earth have never really seen him because he's never had cause to come
to
Earth.
Yeah, also, he's not from Earth.
He's an alien. He crash lands on Earth, and so because he's on Earth, his ring seeks out Hal Jordan, and Hal Jordan becomes the first Earth-sourced Green Lantern.
Yeah.
In this, what's obvious is that Abin Sur came to join in this fight because it was happening in his sector. He gets killed. His ring flies off to go and find somebody. Now, given that this is taking place thousands of years in the past, either there's going to have been a load of Green Lanterns before Hal Jordan or John Stewart or whoever it is,
or the ring is going to
float around for a long time trying to find somebody.
Is it bad that I completely missed that? I just didn't see it when I was watching the film.
I mean, do you not remember the giant green hammer?
No, yeah. I mean, I get...
And it lingers on a shot of the ring flying.
Yeah, it shows... I'm not sure if it's Steppenwolf, but it shows someone, like, doing a double take as the ring flies past him.
It might have been the angle I was watching at. I kind of thought, because they were talking about gods, I thought that we were, like, seeing, like, Zeus and Ares and all that kind of stuff, and I just didn't.
Oh, they were in there, yeah. Yeah.
See, I didn't see Ares, but then I saw David Thewlis' name in the credits.
I saw Ares, yeah.
Yeah. I mean that sequence is... I mean, I'm not surprised that's in there, because that whole kind of flashback and telling of could not be more explicitly Lord of the Rings referenced, you know? Like, it plays like the battle that Cate Blanchett narrates at the start of Fellowship of the Ring. There's literally, like, and one was entrusted to the men, and one was entrusted to... Like, it's a clear Lord of the Rings reference. And I don't think we ended up mentioning it. We got an email. I have to dig it out and find out who sent it, but that was talking about all of the Lord of the Rings kind of... little beats and references in Thor Ragnarok, which of which there were many. I just thought it was quite funny that within the last couple of months we've had two two new releases that are like explicitly referencing Lord of the Rings.
Since you mentioned that and the whole thing with the mother boxes being buried, by the way, I was not prepared for just how different they made the whole idea of the Mother Box from what it actually is in the comic.
Well, let's dig into what is it?
I would have thought, especially given, you know, the way this film's come about and given the involvement of the likes of Geoff Johns, that they would have been going pretty closely, sticking pretty closely to the Kirby mythology. And they
what is that mythology, Seb?
Well, so Mother Box is in the Kirby New Gods stuff and in, you know, the stuff since. Like, there's loads of them. They're basically like personal portable computers, and nobody really knows what they are or where they came from, but they're kind of, they're sentient like supercomputers who have a bond with the person who uses them, and they basically are what provide the New Gods with a lot of their abilities and stuff. Like they enable have you ever seen the New Gods using like boom tubes to teleport and stuff like that? That's all done by a Mother Box, and they contain information, and they're just, you know, they're just incredibly powerful personal sentient supercomputers, essentially.
Yeah, so I mean, this is one of the things.
There are loads of them. They are not three ancient arcane objects.
Yeah, they're not the Triforce of
something called the Unity. Which again, I mean, I'm not the biggest, scholar of the New God stuff, but I don't believe that phrase or that concept has anything to do with anything.
I mean, it's weird, isn't it? As well, because in Batman versus Superman, they showed like that, you know, when he had the snippets on his computer, they showed the Mother Box and Cyborg.
It
looked like they were going to be the standard Mother Boxes. And then, you get this film and they're the Triforce and you're like,
incidentally,
okay.
I love how Batman has video footage of the box creating Cyborg, but doesn't know that's where it is.
I tell you something interesting, actually, in the trailer, there's a shot of a Mother Box in Cyborg's apartment, and that's why the parademon comes to get his father.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the cut sequences, is the kidnapping of Cyborg's dad. It seems like they've at least changed something about the Mother Boxes between the reshoots, because I think in one of the trailers, Steppenwolf it must have been the most recent trailer, Steppenwolf's actually like talking to the Mother Box, and he's talking, I think that's where he drops the reference of there's no lanterns protecting Earth.
So presumably
your theory is, that ring is still out there and no one's picked it up yet. He says that there's no lanterns protecting it, and says something like, I will free you, mother. And I don't know if you've seen, there's been some leaks online of some kind of like some of the cutscenes and some speculation about what those cutscenes were. And one of the concepts was going to be that the Mother Boxes were literally containing the essence of Steppenwolf's mother. And that's why they were called Mother Boxes. And that was kind of what he was trying to do, was almost free her.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, I mean, so, you know, oh, we're in the spoiler section, who cares? That originally this was going to be Steppenwolf was going to take on the Justice League, fail, but escape with his life, and then go to Darkseid, and we'd literally see Darkseid, and Darkseid would kill Steppenwolf for failing him, and then launch his full-on assault on the Earth. So yeah, I mean, there's clearly been a bunch of stuff that's changed. And, you know, you wonder where that stuff will come back in later on if it does. I mean, so this film, it's got the lowest opening weekend of any DCEU movie. It opened to 96 million, which is about 10 million more than, I think, Logan, and about 10 million more than, Doctor Strange, but kind of less than anything that was released this year, less than Wonder Woman, less than the three Marvel movies. And certainly when you compare it to Avengers, which when those characters were brought together, broke records. you wonder what the future is here, because literally this movie could end up making less money than the movie that had Wonder Woman on her own. And this has got Batman, and we can now say it, and Superman in it.
to jump right ahead to the very, very end, like that post-credits scene, in and of itself, I might have quite liked, especially given that they actually show you Deathstroke without his mask on and he actually looks right and stuff. But it's so arrogant to put that there, because it's exactly what Green Lantern did. It's just like, we are definitely going to do a follow-up because this film is definitely going to do so well. And the fact that this film sets up two films that might not happen. I mean, there's more chance, I think, of Justice League 2 happening than that Green Lantern film happening. But, like, as much as I might have liked that scene in isolation, it annoyed me so much that they thought that after the preceding 2 hours that they had earned setting up an Injustice League, you know?
It sets up more than that as well, because it's basically going, like, okay, now we're going to do our Cyborg, Aquaman, and Flash standalone films.
Mm. Yeah, but they were already on the slate, so,
well, and,
you know, and like, Aquaman is being made. I don't mind them setting up Aquaman, even if they do it in such a ham-fisted way as to, here's a character who you're not going to see again for the rest of this film, but come back for the Aquaman film. well, at least that film exists, I didn't mind that.
We were spared a lot more of that, because we were going to see Willem Dafoe as Vulko, I think. Iris West was cut from this movie. Kiersey Clemons, who was cast in the Solo Flash movie. But, I mean, that Solo Flash movie now is presumably going to be something completely different, because it's Flash, yeah. It's Flashpoint now. It's not...
I will say that I think the worst thing this film could have tried to do is to set up the idea of you being interested in coming back for an Aquaman film, because fucking hell. I hated Aquaman so much in this film. I mean, I remember saying to you on a recent episode that after all the stuff about him coming off quite well in the early trailers, and then it was that most recent trailer where I looked at it and I thought, actually, do you know what? I think I will still quite like Flash, but I'm starting to feel like I'm not going to like Aquaman. And I don't know if that was kind of a preconception that carried into this, but...
I mean, I didn't hate Aquaman. I did find the bit where he went to Atlantis absolutely tedious. And the only part I really liked the character and thought he was, you know, worth having in the film is when it turns out he's accidentally holding the lasso of truth or whatever. And
yes,
that's
a really funny beat. But
and
the rest of it, you're just like,
that's got to be a Whedon scene, right? That has to be a Whedon scene.
It can't not be, because like without it, the character is just a dick the whole way through.
It's just
so you
a
can
shit
imagine,
Thor.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just
yeah.
Thor without any likability.
Yeah, shit, hairy Thor. And like, you can imagine Joss Whedon going, okay, I need to fix that.
Any kind of degree of character motivation seems to have, like, disappeared in the cuts and the reshoots. So, like, presumably, I mean, again, one of the rumoured the Willem Dafoe scene was going to be Aquaman talking to Mira and Vulko about kind of whether he should go and help the humans, and did he have a responsibility to these people, and kind of talking about his role under the sea and his role on land. And like, you just think it might have been bad, but at least it would have been an attempt at, you know, rounding out character motivations.
There's that rumor as well, or there's a list of sort of cuts and changes that someone posted saying, like, this was Whedon, this was Snyder, and some of this was James Wan. But they said that apparently the scene of Aquaman rescuing that guy and, like, taking the whiskey was originally at the end of the movie in the montage.
Right.
And kind of you can sort of see how that would represent an arc if he starts off being a dick who doesn't really care, and then by the end of the film he's like, okay, I guess I'm a superhero now, but I'm going to do it in a way that's still a bit dickish. Like, you can see how that would have been a thread, but there's just no semblance of that in the film itself.
I've got to say, though, out of all of this, so yeah, I you know, go through the characters. Wonder Woman, well, I liked her solo movie, so I will happily see more of that character moving forward. Aquaman, really didn't care. There was just nothing to him. The Flash, yeah, you've got a take on that character, so that's fine. Ezra, you've definitely got a take. It doesn't feel like the rest of the DCU. God, I mean, I came out, I was talking to my wife on the way out, and
every time
I enjoy it.
And I was saying to her, it's amazing how the Flash, aside from two like 30 second cameos, maybe not even that, has never been on the big screen before, and yet we're at the point where fast powers look tired. Like, there was nothing they could do with the Flash's superpowers, because we've seen them do the Flash on TV, and like my wife did it twice, said that she was like, I prefer how they make him look on TV, even just with the speed. And I was like, yeah, I mean, yeah, I can't disagree with that.
I think
we've had two versions of Quicksilver, we've had Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like at this point, like, it's crazy that they've got to the Flash finally, and it's like, who would be in there done that?
There's one thing that this film was able to do with the Flash's powers that only this film could have done, and it's one of the best bits of the film, which is when he's running around Superman and Superman turns round and looks at him at the same speed as him. Yeah. That is a great, that was a great moment.
And I think that whole scene, let's talk about Superman, that whole scene was Whedon, I think. And I think that because that seems to be the scene that is being pointed out as the mustache scene.
Well, there's a lot of mustache. I think some of that scene is still Snyder and some of it's Whedon. And the reason I'll tell you that is that there is a bit right at the end that is, forget the mustache and forget Aquaman with his changing tattoos on the badly comped in background. The bit that is the most obviously reshot is Batman on the grass talking about his injuries, because the grass is so obviously AstroTurf and the background is so obviously blue screened in. So it's obvious that they've recreated a scene that they shot on the actual, whether it's a location or a set, and they've gone back and added in a few little
bits. That's the scene where Batman turns into Lego Batman for a couple of lines.
And it's obviously, every time Batman makes a joke in this film, with the possible exception of the I'm rich line, you can tell it's one that Whedon's thrown in. And even the I'm rich line might be.
I mean, the reason I think Snyder probably did that scene is I can't imagine Joss Whedon doing a scene where, like, Superman's alive, holy fuck, everyone is scared. Like, but that, you know what? That seems like a Snyder idea to me.
I like that scene.
I like it.
It's maybe the only time Snyder has done Superman in a way that I like.
I mean, I like it, but that seems like Zack Snyder's thing to me. Mm. I think Kryptonians are dangerous and terrifying.
That scene encapsulates almost everything I like and dislike about this movie, or everything that works and doesn't work about this movie. Like you say, I love the Flash bit. I love that gag visually. It reminded me of the Peter Parker scene, just the terrified eyeballing of the person who, at that point in the movie anyway, might be the villain. I think, like, it's one of those scenes where, yet again, Batman gets left behind because he's got no place in this movie. This version of this character is constantly being left slightly behind and then catching up. Because he doesn't really have a purpose.
Did you suddenly think partway through the film, as I did, that Batman was going to die at the end, and that's why Ben Affleck's been being coy in interviews about coming back? Because I suddenly got a feeling that they might actually kill him off, and that his arc for this series of films was complete.
I mean,
it never crossed my mind. I mean, that would require the film to have actual character arcs. So,
I just don't think this version of Batman is interesting. I don't think the setup for the character moving forward is interesting. And I don't particularly want to see, right now, I don't want to see a Batman movie that exists in this universe. I'd rather Matt Reeves start again with a different actor and do something completely different. I don't know whether that'd be frustrating for viewers, but
it says a lot that they've retrospectively decided that this Batman is the Burton and Schumacher films Batman, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, in order to graft a history onto him, they basically said, oh, he's that Batman that you know from those early films.
I sort of do like Batman as, like, the grizzled old crime fighter finally sort of ushering in a new age of superheroes. Like, I think that's an interesting way to use the character. But at the same time, I don't think they go far enough with that if they're going to do that.
I think what doesn't work about him is that because of all these changes across these movies, he doesn't feel consistent. And it feels like the Gotham approach of what if we do a little bit from this and a little bit from that and a little bit from that. And I do wonder that kind of what you said to me before, guys, is that, like, you can do so many versions of Batman that are right. I wonder whether a hodgepodge of those different versions is the version that is wrong. You know, like, how can he be the Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns Batman, but also the Joel Schumacher Tim Burton Batman? It just doesn't make sense. And I just, about halfway through this movie, I just didn't care. And, like, I quite liked, for all the things that I didn't like about Batman v Superman, I quite liked Affleck. I thought Affleck was just...
He's just not a wisecracker, is he?
Well, right. and like, it just, even in the scenes where he's like walking around chatting to Alfred in Bruce Wayne mode, I was like, I don't want to spend time with this guy.
The last few months have been tough for those of us who are actually quite inclined towards liking Ben Affleck, haven't they?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, it's true. He just doesn't want to be there. And, like, yeah, you're playing Batman. Come on.
I don't believe for one second that he's going to be in those Matt Reeves movies. No, I mean, the rumor out there is that Jake Gyllenhaal has been lined up, which I don't really see either. I mean, I really don't. I love Jake Gyllenhaal. I don't see it. But whether I believe that or not, and I'm inclined to say I probably don't. I just don't see Ben Affleck being a part of this universe after this. It's not worked. Other actors. Henry Cavill, for example, let's
come back to Superman because
yeah, I think
this is the third film in this universe where I've had to talk about this version of Superman in these films with a sort of, well, Henry Cavill could be a really great Superman if only they'd let him actually be Superman.
You see, so, I think they pulled off the pivot at the end. I think,
yeah, I think by the end of the film, finally.
I even think, as I said before, like I really like the scene where he comes back and he's actually fighting them because it's like, oh, thank God, Superman's back. was my main thing. But when he actually comes back, let's maybe skip over the stuff at the Kent farm because again, all the stuff with Lois has obviously suffered so badly from the film being hacked together. And like again, I don't understand how they've managed to have Amy Adams as such a bad version of Lois Lane, but they have, and we're stuck with it. But as soon as he turns up in the costume and they've deliberately made the costume look brighter and he smiles and you're like, fucking hell, finally.
And then he completely obliterates Steppenwolf in about 3 seconds and you're like, oh, yeah.
I'd loved that throughout the whole film. And so I think this is something that we've lost from the Snyder version, which I think really would have worked in the Snyder version. The rumour was that it was going to be basically Batman says, we've got to resurrect Superman. And the arguments are had. I think we're going to come back to those arguments. And basically, Batman says, "Look, I had this vision, which is his vision from Batman v Superman, his dream, mm-hmm. his nightmare dream, or whatever. And I think if we don't resurrect him, Steppenwolf will, and we don't want him to use a Kryptonian against us. So that's why they wake him back up. And so then, when he wakes up and he's a threat." It may, or potentially a threat, it makes more sense because, like, it is this, like, oh God, which way is he going to go? Is it the same guy as before? And I really like that. And I do like that scene because that scene just, I think that I've not believed at any point in any Superman film, really, that Superman is as powerful as he feels in this film. And that is an accomplishment of this movie. And do you know what? The one film that I want to see more than anything else coming out of this movie is Man of Steel 2.
Yeah, and no, I would agree. And it's like, you know, I would have come out of Man of Steel never, pretty much not wanting to see another film with that version of Superman. So for me to come out of this film and actually go, oh, wow, I can't wait for the next Superman film. Well, can't wait, maybe putting it a bit strongly, but I would like to see where this Superman goes next now, especially because I want to know what the hell they're going to do about Clark Kent coming back to life. But
trapped under rubble.
Yeah, if they actually do that, that would be amazing. But yeah, it's like, he was just right. I mean, he only got about 5 minutes of getting to do anything, but I just immediately felt that Superman was there and was actually Superman. And even with the dodgy CGI lip, Henry Cavill just is Superman in a way that Ben Affleck isn't really Batman.
I know that's become the meme, by the way, the lip. It really didn't bother me.
Did massively bother me.
I wonder whether, especially given that I missed the Green Lantern, and especially given that, and I was specifically looking at his lip, I'm wondering whether I shouldn't have had that second beer before I went into Justice League.
I showed a picture to my friend, and she was like, that doesn't look like Henry Cavill. And I was like, it doesn't look like a person. Like, in action, it's worse than the computer game.
Wait, so where was his lip replaced? Was it, I know it was in that.
Basically, every time he appeared, as near as I could tell.
Maybe that's it. Maybe I was just normalized to it.
I really lost the distinction between CGI face Cavill and non-CGI face Cavill.
Yeah. I mean, it does stand to reason that, you know, the Cavill-ness of this movie is what the reshoots have been.
Yeah. I mean, I do, quickly, I want to talk about where, like, you mentioned Batman's vision from Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
Do you think the Flash coming back in that film and going, Lois is the key, was supposed to be something for this film?
No, but I think they've worked it into that.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me like Superman was supposed to come back evil, and then he was going to go, oh, Lois is the key. Mm. She'll make him remember he's not evil.
Yeah, potentially.
I think, yeah, I think, okay, we're going into wild, you know, speculation and hypothesis here, but let's assume that if this film was originally going to be split into two, my assumption would be that final act of the first film, they bring back Superman and he's bad and they have to fight him.
Mm-hmm.
And they pretty much almost get defeated by him. And the way that they resolve that is to send the Flash back in time to tell Batman to get Lois or something. Maybe Lois is actually dead at the point that he goes back in time or something, because that's never been done in a Superman film before. Something like that. That makes sense to me as maybe how it could have gone and why that would have been in Batman v Superman in the first place. Because as it stands, that scene has no place whatsoever in the timeline of this film or these films going forwards.
They are doing a Flashpoint movie, though, so maybe the plan is now to retrofit somehow, continuity-wise.
But imagine how annoying it will be if, after finally bringing in a happy and hopeful and brightly coloured version of Superman, the next film has him turn into the version from Bruce's dream in Batman v Superman.
Do you know what? It might be Flash goes back in time, creates some kind of dark future, and, you know, the movie is, rather than lingering on that dark future, it's trying to, you know, it's him kind of jolting around and trying to get back to. I don't know what that movie's going to be honest, but, like, they've talked. I saw Geoff Johns specifically reference, like, the inclusion of Batman in it, but, like, a Thomas Wayne Batman. So it sounds like they are going to go close to the Flashpoint comics in some regard. But maybe, I don't know, maybe that's your opportunity to write Ben Affleck out. You know, you create some kind of different history for Batman.
Jake Gyllenhaal plays Thomas Wayne.
Yep.
Oh, no, wait, Thomas Wayne is Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
We've got Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It will be so interesting to see what DC do and Warner Brothers do from here, because they've got some successes. They've got Wonder Woman. You don't throw away this shared universe
because you've got
Wonder Woman, and because you've got, you know, a couple of movies in the can that's coming out that's definitely part of this continuity. But you also feel like you can't just plow ahead with this universe and with a Justice League 2 that's this lineup plus, like, a Green Lantern. That's just not going to cut the mustard, is it?
No.
No, yeah, definitely not.
But we've still got Shazam to come as well, of course.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's Shazam. I'm sure they could make freestanding. It doesn't have to tie into this.
I was surprised we didn't get... I thought we were going to get some kind of reference in the flashback sequence. You could have quite easily had the wizard Shazam in there or some kind of lightning reference there that I'm surprised they didn't go with.
Well, again, I think that flashback scene has been chopped up as well. I think we were probably going to go more into that and see more of the details of it. And what we've got is kind of like a voiceover across the like battle footage. I think we would originally have seen a lot more of that. I think, you know, David Fewlis is not credited in this movie because he turned up to film some background stuff. He was probably supposed to have lines.
I mean, it's weird though that they would cut more Wonder Woman stuff, because clearly a lot of the reshoots were designed to bring Wonder Woman more to the fore.
Yeah, and one of the ways they decided to do that was with this weird relationship with Bruce Wayne, which I guess Zack Snyder kind of established maybe some kind of flirty romantic interaction between the two of them. They're the two that are bringing the team together, but
I think maybe this is the kind of later scene where you think, oh, is this actually going to go into more of a potential romance direction? But earlier on, the sort of the friendship dynamic that they have, I think, works quite well. And I think it's definitely where you get most of Affleck's best stuff. And this ties into something that I wanted to say about Wonder Woman and Gal Gadot, which is that before this, I remember when we were discussing one of the trailers and I was being pessimistic about the film. And I said, I thought one of the things it would really struggle with was, you know, you had Wonder Woman where you had these two really engaging lead actors with a fantastic chemistry. And in this film, you're only going to have one of them and she's not going to be in it as much. Now, admittedly, nobody else in this film is as charismatic and engaging as Chris Pine is in Wonder Woman. But Gal Gadot has amazing chemistry with pretty much everybody she shares the screen with at any point.
Yeah.
And especially the stuff with Batman. I don't think it's Affleck doing the heavy lifting there. But for whatever reason, like that bit where they're by the lake and they're just kind of dumping exposition, I enjoyed that stuff. Yeah. And that then kind of leads into the finding the team stuff, which is a period of about 20 minutes that it really works.
Her scenes with Cyborg were the only ones where Cyborg was actually interesting as well.
Yeah, and even her stuff with Flash, which was mostly jokey, but that little bit was, again, one of the best Flash moments when he bounces the sword back to her. and then when he lands on her awkwardly and scurries up. Like, there is obviously something about her that she works really well with other people around her and just has this really strong chemistry with them and is able to bring out better performances out of all of them. And that arguably makes her an even stronger asset to these films than the performance of Wonder Woman.
I bet it makes Brett Ratner really upset as well.
Yes, I think it's safe to say that she is significantly more important to Warners than Brett Ratner at this point. There's only going to be one winner in that battle.
Yeah. The part of that I agree, I like the friendshipy stuff. I just thought it broke down a little bit when they tried to reintroduce flirtation in the middle. And I also thought the scene that you have been tweeting about, you might like to talk about, I think probably for you is the most egregious moment in this movie.
I mean, before Seb starts, I've got a similarly egregious complaint, but it's a different scene. So I'll go next.
For those who didn't read me talking about it on Twitter, there is that bit where Bruce basically tells Diana off, and whether or not it's rooted in anything that's correct, because I think from a structural point of view of these films, there is a valid question of where the hell has Wonder Woman been since the end of Wonder Woman and Batman v Superman, given what happens in Man of Steel. If you didn't have Man of Steel, then it does make sense for her to emerge at that point, but yeah, anyway, that is kind of a valid question, but that's a question for the filmmakers, not for her. And to have a scene after the way that Wonder Woman is treated and presented in Patty Jenkins' film, it wasn't just that there's a scene where Batman tells her off, because that's annoying enough as it is. It's that, and this should be said with the caveat that I don't know if it's been definitively stated or proven that the leaked Wonder Woman Joss Whedon script excerpts are actually genuine. I think most people believe they are, but I don't know if it's 100%. So I will say this with that caveat. But one of the worst things about those script extracts were that there were lots of moments where Steve is basically telling Diana off. And that Batman scene had almost the exact same tone of voice. And so I don't know, again, as I said on Twitter, I don't know if that scene is a Whedon scene or a Snyder scene, but it was so... It left such a nasty taste to have that scene after you've had that Wonder Woman film where she is such a beacon of hope and one of the best, like, pure superheroes we've seen on the screen in a long time. to have fucking Ben Affleck Batman turn round and go, well, you, where have you been? You're wrong, blah, 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 was just, oh, fuck off.
I genuinely thought, like, when he was going, like, oh, why haven't you been out there inspiring people? I genuinely thought she was just going to say, like, because your society is horribly sexist. Like, that's why. I have been, but no one's been paying attention.
Yeah, it's... I think it probably is Whedon, because I think anything that specifically references...
Steve Trevor?
Yeah, well, anything that specifically references the Wonder Woman movie is reshoot stuff.
Will come in later, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like you say, I kind of... They dug a hole for themselves, didn't they, with how they included her in this universe, and... Yeah, it's a shame, but I don't know what else they would have done. I mean, probably they'd do it and play it differently in terms of the tone. But yeah, it just also didn't seem right for me that, like, Wonder Woman ends up arguing for not reviving Superman for reasons unknown to anyone. It's like, we could bring Superman back to life. Okay, cool. What are the risks? I mean, it's kind of like a last ditch attempt, because we're kind of screwed if we don't. So we probably just need to bring him back, and she just goes, "No, don't."
Yeah. I mean, I do want to talk about.
It serves is for her to be wrong.
Sorry, I was going to say I do want to talk about the thing that I hate about Wonder Woman. But first, I mean, the big unspoken problem with bringing Superman back is like, oh, let's use the thing that Lex Luthor used, which created a massive monster that killed Superman.
Yeah.
Like, that's why they shouldn't bring him back, if you're going to have that argument.
But again, maybe if you have the
if thing you have
in the
a
movie,
mother box,
they well, if you have the thing in the movie where Steppenwolf is going to bring him back as a bad guy, then it makes a lot more sense.
Well, quite. But yeah, I mean, for me, the thing with Wonder Woman that, again, I think this is a Whedon thing, because it's what he does with the Black Widow, which is at the end of the film when they're all sort of happy that they've separated the mother boxes or whatever. And defeated Steppenwolf, like, they're all laughing and joking. And she goes, oh, I work with children. And it's like, sorry, she's not the mum of the group.
Yeah, she can have fun as well.
Yeah, like, and I wish it wasn't Whedon, because he's supposed to be a feminist, but it's so similar to what he does with Black Widow in all of the Avengers stuff.
In that she's the buzzkill.
Yeah, like, she's not the one having fun, she's the one rolling her eyes at the boys. Mm. And it's like... It's not fair, and it's not how the character was in a solo film. Like, if anything, it was the opposite. It was Steve Trevor going, like, you can't do that. Stop it. Stop it.
Yeah.
And stop and having
she
fun.
Was, it's, yeah. She was the one who was running off and doing stuff.
And so for me, that was the like, you fucked up Wonder Woman bit in this film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think both of those are fair. I think the benefit... The good thing, though, is that they don't ruin Wonder Woman. There's nothing here that you go like, oh, right, well, that's completely cut the legs out from under her, which, you know, we've seen from you know, other team-up movies, that is entirely possible. You can kind of compromise a character.
It's just that there are moments that make you feel that this film doesn't understand why she worked so well in her own film.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, okay, but I mean, I guess the good thing is we know that Patty Jenkins is going to be getting her back for Wonder Woman 2. Should we talk about some more stuff that we liked? Because what I did really like, and I almost think it's a shame now that we're doing Flashpoint instead, is I liked the introductory scene with Ezra Miller, which is something that we've seen from the very first footage that was released of Justice League, the Batman meeting Flash scene. I liked that version of Barry Allen, who seemed like it wasn't so much that he was quippy, it was that he was awkward. And I did wonder whether, like, Ezra Miller was, like, making a conscious choice to play him autistic almost. Like, there seems to be, like, almost, like, facial tics and little quirks about the character. And, you know, the fact that he kind of lived alone and was isolated from everyone and only really spoke to his dad. It felt like there was a really interesting conscious choice for what they were doing with The Flash. And I liked him after that. And I really liked him in the scenes with his dad. I thought it was one of the strongest moments at the end of the film, where I thought Billy Crudup was great, and I loved the reaction when he told, when he said he was getting the job. But and we've definitely lost an Iris Allen scene from this movie. She was going to be in there. Kiersey Clemons was going to be
apparently
there.
Apparently, that's, I read, is that because she's, she'll likely be recast for when the, because she had been cast by,
I don't,
was that was going to direct.
I don't know yet. Rick Famuyiwa cast her. She was in Dope, the movie that he directed. And which is great, and she's good in. But yeah, I don't know whether she, there's certainly nothing being said definitively that she's been recast, but it's a, I guess it's possible, but I guess, you know, in a Flashpoint movie, is she really going to be central anyway? But yeah, I guess what I was saying, you've
got quite a lot to set up there.
Yeah. I think the point really though is that just, it felt like there was two different versions of that, of Flash throughout the movie, and one version of it, of him, was fun. And I was like, yeah, I like this guy. And I liked all of it. I just wondered whether there was something that was a little bit, there was a little bit of more depth to the character originally that potentially we lost as we moved into this new
cut. I mean, I did like the idea of a superhero who's not actually that heroic and not especially confident. Like, that feels like something we haven't seen.
Yeah.
And so I kind of enjoyed that aspect. Like, I didn't get any impression of like autism or Asperger's or anything. What I got was like, his powers mean he's operating so quickly he can't, like, interact with people who don't know that he's got super speed. Like, that's what I took away from those scenes.
I do, yeah. I liked that. I really liked when he was talking in the introduction about people are just too slow.
And
stuff. One thing I did actually really like about the way they did him as the Flash is that the way that he finds to be a superhero revolves almost entirely around saving people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've talked about this before, about a problem I often have with these films is that superhero tends to mean punching and fighting rather than actually rescuing people.
Yeah.
And the way that Batman gets him to actually respond and be the Flash is to say, just go and grab one person, just save one person, and then you've done something.
And that's all and he does throughout the movie, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. All he does there from then on throughout the film. He's there to help rescue Batman later on. And there's the bit where he rescues that family, which admittedly he's upstaged.
Yeah, I mean, all that
is what a quite a fun gag, but it's like, yes, because he's the guy who's fast. So the thing that he can do is get in there and get out and save people.
Like, good, do you think you, apparently that Batman speech to the Flash was a Whedon thing. And I think it's pretty clear all that Russian family stuff was Whedon as well.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's interesting. Like, I feel like even though Zack Snyder got a lot of flack for like, hi, do you not remember the collateral damage in your last two films? It feels like he just, again, didn't care, and Whedon went, okay, this is something people complain about, so I'm going to fix that.
Yeah, it did make some of the stuff in that final act feel incredibly...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
coherent. And I mean, like, that final act must have been chopped up. But I'm sure there's one point after the Flash has already left that, like, you see almost like a bolt of lightning and Steppenwolf gets knocked over. But Flash is supposed to be, has supposed to have been running towards that family in the car for about a minute at that point. And then we cut back to him a minute later and he's still running towards the family in the car. And you're kind of going, oh, what's...
There's the ADR, definitely ease this time or something.
Yeah. And there's stuff in that, there's stuff in the final sequence where Batman's kind of, you know, like, he's driving in on like almost this suicide mission, I guess they suggest. But it doesn't really end up, I don't know. It didn't track. There was a lot of the kind of the toing and the throwing about what this character was doing over here and what this character was doing over there that didn't really track. And the only thing that felt consistent in there was that Cyborg was the one who was trying to separate the mother boxes and that, Superman was the one who was going to come in and actually, like, very, very easily beat up Steppenwolf. And I think they did that in a nice way that it was like, Superman is so clearly, like, dominating here. Like, it's so easy for him. But he didn't feel like a kind of a jerk or a bully beating up this bad guy.
He didn't, like, completely fuck him up. He just kind of knocked him about a bit, and then Steppenwolf's own fear did the rest of it.
And we've tonally, we've...
Yeah, it felt quite crucial that, like, a deliberate choice that Superman doesn't... Like, that villain is a villain that had to be killed, really, in order for the there not to be a hanging plot element. So it's really crucial that Superman does not explicitly kill the villain.
I had the moment watching that scene, I was like, oh, come on, he's not going to kill Steppenwolf, is he? And I think they dealt with that in a really fun way.
Well, yeah, it was a smart ending, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, he's seen Superman and he's finally scared. I think in the original version of that, they're suggesting that when Steppenwolf rips Cyborg apart, that he does a proper job with that and kind of kills him. And Batman says something along the lines of, yeah, the organic parts of him are gone and that they would have to, but that there might be a way of salvaging him. Which obviously, you know, when you're reaching for a different tone in this movie, it's not the way to go.
Yeah, it's interesting. If that had happened, we might have actually noticed that Cyborg was in the movie.
Do you know what? When they introduced him, I actually thought, for the first time, I could imagine a solo Cyborg movie that I'm like, okay, you've got the crux of an interesting character there.
He's the Robo Frankenstein.
Yeah, and just this angst, you know, that this kind of like throwback to a monster movie kind of angst about this
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, sorry, I mean Frankenstein's Robo Monster.
Yes. Yeah, I thought like, oh, okay, I could see that. And I actually thought Ray Fisher, for someone who I knew absolutely nothing about, and given that he's given a character who for most of the time just has to deliver like binary exposition. I quite like this guy. The one thing that didn't materialize, that it feels like we've been sold on since like word go on this project when it was a pure Snyder vehicle, was that we were going to love the banter and the interplay between Flash and Cyborg, and that they were almost going to have their own double act in this movie. They get one scene together.
That scene, right? That scene is so obviously a Joss Whedon scene,
yes,
as well.
Yeah, that's it as well.
So of them, like, literally robbing Superman's grave, like, while wisecracking. It was such a Buffy scene.
Yeah.
It's like they took a scene from Buffy and put it in the film.
Yeah, and I liked the joke at the start about him, Flash. I was watching it, I was going, Flash, why is Flash digging a grave? He could do this in seconds. And then he actually says it, and I'm like,
yeah,
that's funny. And that's what you get when you hire Joss Whedon. You get creative little ways around something that feels tired or that feels stupid.
And thing as well, where they're like, we're the accidents. Like, that's an interesting, like, thing for them to talk about.
Yeah, but when it's the only part of it in the movie, it doesn't really...
Yeah.
It doesn't really get there.
It would have been nice if that was an arc instead of a remark.
But yeah, on the Whedon thing, I think, yes, you do get those kind of creative solutions around bad stuff. But I think when you're hacking up a movie and adding scenes in here and here and there, there is still some stuff that maybe he can't solve. And there are some moments where in a movie that's just having to get from plot A to B to C, you end up getting some really stupid shit, such as, and this is again going back to my scene, which I thought encapsulated almost everything that was good and bad about the movie, in that fight with Superman, and then Steppenwolf just drops into the background. Oh, that mother box you've left hanging around the Metropolis.
He left a mother box in the car park.
He's just on the car, and Steppenwolf comes, and he gets it.
I was literally, crying with laughter in the film.
My favourite bit as well was, I mean, this film is full of, dodgy exposition, where Gal Gadot turns to the camera and goes, Steppenwolf, he's got the mother box.
Oh, there he goes.
It's like, yes, I'm going to have to point this out, because I know it seems, insane that would be the way. Like, literally, if Steppenwolf doesn't put these three mother boxes together, he's not really going to do it. That's the only way he's going to destroy the Earth. He needs to get all three in order to terraform it.
And
so he's got two of them already. Should we just leave the third one lying around there? I mean, that's more careless than Thanos has been with his Infinity Stones.
Yeah.
I thought that was just...
I was literally, mouth agape, laughing at the screen when that happened. I was just wait a second. The thing that can destroy the universe, or the thing that can destroy the planet, they just forgot it was there.
Talking of clumsiness with this film, the opening act, a lot of which I thought the first 20-30 minutes were pretty fun, but for a film that we've been going for so long, this seems like the wrong way around to do it. It seems like the wrong way around to properly introduce three of your 5/6 team members properly for the first time in this movie, when we've not seen any of them before. And especially, I mean, when Marvel were doing it, we'd seen all of them before, and even the version that we hadn't seen, Mark Ruffalo as the Incredible Hulk, the movie didn't go to pains to go, this is the Incredible Hulk. It made subtle references to it, and it was a character who culturally is well-known enough that you can kind of get that that's the Incredible Hulk. When mm-hmm. you're introducing characters like Cyborg and Aquaman, who really haven't had any mainstream, proper mainstream anyway, exposure, and The Flash, who, if you're one of the 5 to 10 million people who watch The Flash on TV, you get kind of his basic setup, and you get... But so they had to do all of that in the first 10-20 minutes, and for those three characters, it felt like we just had to go, look, this is his deal, it's this, and it's this, and it's this, and it's this, and now just accept that that's a character in the rest of the movie. And it just really didn't work, because it's the Spider-Man thing, isn't it? It's the start of Spider-Man Homecoming, where, we don't need to explain that. We don't even need to refer to those things. You get it. He lives with his aunt. He's got spider powers. This bash bosh, yeah, that's him. For these guys, when you do that bish bash bosh approach, that's not good enough, because culturally there's no real conception of who they are. So you can mm-hmm. tell me that Aquaman comes from beneath the sea and he's the king of Atlantis, and maybe or maybe not he can speak to fish. But I can't fill in the gaps there in my head. Yeah, I can't fill in the rest of those gaps.
I didn't know Aquaman's origin going into the movie, and coming out of the movie, I feel like I know about a third of it.
and on top of that, you don't really know, I don't really know in this movie, what his motivation is. I don't really, why is he turning up to fight with the humans?
What are his powers?
Yeah, what are his powers? Is he the king underwater? Is the underwater stuff going to look that crap in Aquaman? There's just so much of it.
Why do they have to stop and, have a dry bit around them so that they can have a conversation?
Oh, God, yeah.
because if they're Atlanteans who live underwater, then they'll speak telepathically.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why.
Do they have to do that every time they want a conversation? Or is it just so that you can have Amber Heard standing there dripping wet for her one scene in the film?
It's like,
it was ugly though, wasn't it? That the whole underwater sequence was ugly.
Yeah. It does say that there's pretty much nothing about this that makes me want to see the Aquaman film.
No.
And I mean, you know, you're from a pretty bad starting point anyway, because there's
Aquaman.
Nothing intrinsically that makes me want to see an Aquaman film.
I mean, Aquaman, I do think it was funny. He comes off, he's just a bro, isn't he? Like,
yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, without that one Joss Whedon scene of him being like, "Actually, this is all a facade. There's nothing to him."
The thing is, I don't really like Aquaman in the comics, and I didn't really like Aquaman in the film. But they're very different because this kind of bro dude version of Aquaman, as I say, it owes nothing to the Aquaman from the comics. It is pretty much Thor. Which isn't necessarily a bad thing if you want to do a take on Thor. It's something that's been shown that can work. But Aquaman in the comics is basically a grumpy bastard because he's king of the sea and everyone who lives on Earth treats the sea like shit. So he's quite annoyed all the time. And actually you can have some quite good stuff out of that. And actually in a Justice League context, Grant Morrison used that quite well. But yeah, I can't say I've ever been interested in like solo Aquaman comics.
I thought it was very weird. It's very weird actually how the DC logo at the start of the film has the comics clean shaven, thin Aquaman in. And then you're immediately watching a film with a completely different version.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't really say much positive about Aquaman. And I don't want to do a told you so moment, but I just never, I don't know, like I never saw what the appeal of this character was through what we'd seen of him.
I mean, I think it was that Jason Momoa was having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
And everyone was going, oh, finally, someone having fun.
I think there's a version of this that could have worked. It's you know, like there's a version of Thor where he was too much of an arrogant dick and so you don't like him. You know, playing that character can go one of two ways. And I say, I do keep making the comparison to Thor, but Thor went one way and this went the other way. It didn't have the stuff to pull you into actually liking him. Like, and just when he's just, you know, flying around going booyah and stuff.
I'd watch that movie.
I think it does ultimately, doesn't it? Because there's so little to the plot. There's so little. It seems to have stripped away a lot of the DCEU world building. So yeah, you see, there's a background reference to a Green Lantern who we may or may not ever see Green Lanterns in this universe. I mean, what was that scene? So that scene that was in the trailer, the most recent, I think maybe the Comic-Con footage from this year, that was Alfred looking at someone and saying, oh, I know you, I knew you'd come, or I knew you'd turn up.
Oh, yeah.
So, given the way that Superman is reintroduced, I mean, is that Superman coming back from the farm? Or was that a Green Lantern sequence?
Because that was Superman. Like,
definitely.
Yeah, well, because they say hope in that scene, doesn't it?
I think we have lost so much material between that fight
and the farm.
Crash site and him actually returning from the farm. I think you'd have had about half an hour of a film there where Clark is trying to come to terms with being back.
Well, yeah, because like what happens is he wakes up and he's kind of confused and angry.
Yeah,
and he says to Batman, like, "Do you bleed?" And then he flies off with Lois.
Oh, I cringed so hard when he said that.
Me too, Jesus. And then he lands on the farm and he's like, "Oh, actually, I'm fine."
And what's weird is he seems to be fine when he's at the farm, but he waits before going. He's like,
"They
brought
me
back to life to fight this thing. I'm all right now. I know who I am. I probably need to go and help them, but I'll just hang around here for a bit." And surely what was actually going to happen was he's back at the farm because he's not right yet. Mm-hmm. And the moment at which he becomes right, he goes, "Right, I'm off." Kind of.
Yeah.
But maybe he needed that time to figure out how they're going to explain Clark Kent coming back to him. Because, you know, my assumption, even when he dies at the end of Batman v Superman, would have been, okay, so from now on, they are going to have a Superman who doesn't have a secret identity.
Yeah.
And they can make that work. But the very end of this film shows you that, no, he's gone back to being Clark Kent with the glasses.
Well, do you know what?
Maybe he's
going to
be Chris Kent, his own twin brother.
I thought for a second when that was unfolding that was Superman taking off his glasses and that he was about to walk back into the Daily Planet, you know, as Clark Kent, but without the glasses. Yeah. But we finally get the kind of the shirt ripping scene, which I guess has got to be Whedon, doesn't it? It feels like Whedon. Do you know what though? Like, it's, I don't think I want to see a version of Henry Cavill Superman where I'd rather them just explain it away in some nonsense kind of, you know, oh yeah, Clark's been on the holiday for all this time and we just thought he was dead because his phone was off and we couldn't get through to him. I'd rather that than see a version. I want to see Henry Cavill playing a classic Christopher Reeve-esque version of Superman.
I'm kind of the opposite. I don't want to see that. I don't think he can do it better than Reeve. So,
well, maybe not better than Reeve, but
no, I think what Henry Cavill could do is a Dean Cain type Clark Kent, Clark is actually a pretty decent, well-rounded character in his own right.
Yeah, no, I don't want him fully bumbling, but I would like him just not to be an asshole, which he doesn't seem to be in this movie.
Did you get that? So yeah, there was a bit in the film where they separate the mother boxes and they like land on their asses and then they start laughing. And I was like, this film has spectacularly misjudged its own tone. Like, it reminded me of Fantastic Four, like the Josh Trank version in that respect. Because I was just like, I'm not there with you on this being like a moment of super relief.
Not least because I assumed at that point, I did not assume at that point that they had just won. Because it happened so quickly and so easily. I was like, surely we've got another half an hour of actually just fighting Steppenwolf.
Yeah, well, Steppenwolf hadn't actually been defeated at that point either. He'd just been sort of knocked off screen.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things. Like, I think this film is, like, misses its own tone. And Whedon tried to drag it back to a sort of hopeful, optimistic place and didn't quite manage.
It just sort of doesn't quite earn it.
Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah. I mean, with that final bit, I'm not saying for a second that I would rather have watched half an hour of CGI fighting, but you only have to compare to the sequence in Man of Steel where, you know, he's got to destroy that engine thing and Zod is on the other side of the world and he's got to fight him. And it's this like massive struggle and like both of these things are incredibly difficult for him to do. And he eventually, after about 45 minutes of bad CGI fighting, succeeds. And Batman v Superman, they're fighting Doomsday and it's a real struggle. And the only way to ultimately defeat Doomsday also involves Superman getting killed. And then here, they pull some boxes apart and then they punch Steppenwolf a bit and then his own creatures come and destroy him. And it's just for what's supposed to be the big stakes. Because I also don't feel that the world is sufficient.
I was about to say.
You don't see enough of it. You don't see anything happening outside of the little red bubble that they're in. And you can say all you want, oh, this is going to destroy the world. But
yeah, you've got to believe it.
I find it interesting that there's a, you know, obviously we've talked so much about Man of Steel and collateral damage and disaster porn. But there is obviously a balance between too much of what Man of Steel does and not enough, which is here. You've got to show the threat, at least. It doesn't mean you revel in it, but you have to show a tangible threat to more people than a family in a little shack.
What you have to do is show Paris having a bit of an earthquake and Sydney having a bit of an earthquake.
Yeah. Basically, yeah, that's the trope of the genre. That's how you show a worldwide threat.
But you know what? I think for all its other faults, Age of Ultron does a very good job of that. Like, it is a small, you know, Sokovia, I was going to say, like, Russian or so. It's a city in Sokovia, but it's a populated area. It is, for the moment, concentrated to that area. But the threat to those people in those area will then spill over to more people, because this is like this is the last line of defense, and you buy it in there, and you buy that every person in that city is under threat, and that if they fail there, that more people will be under threat.
And I think crucially, you also buy that the world is actually watching that. Whereas yes. in this, you get the sense that, like, it's not like, you know, the world's military is scrambling. Like, no one else on the planet has a clue what's going on.
Yeah.
Except for Alfred. Yeah.
I mean, I mean, Man of Steel does, I think, achieve that. It does feel like a worldwide event. It does feel like the entire world is watching this kind of, you know, like, Battle of New York kind of level of event that, yeah, this changes everything. And yeah, you don't really feel that here. But I mean, I think ultimately for DC, what this movie has ended up being is it's not what the Avengers was. It's not a culmination. It's not a victory lap. It's not this thing that you go, look what we have managed to achieve. Look what we've managed to build. Let's tell a story within this. And let's also like move forward after that. It feels like it's a movie that goes, let's get in on one side. Let's put these characters into it. Let's not kind of burn any more bridges on the way out. Yeah, let's not kill any characters, because let's not close any roads to ourselves, but let's kind of get out of there and let's try and give ourselves a new flat platform, kind of in the way that Thor Ragnarok does by kind of like tearing up the old. But this is more like, look, we had these versions of these characters that weren't really working. What if we had these kind of new versions of most of them, of the ones that we need to change, mostly Superman. Let's fix Superman. Let's not do anything too ambitious with the others so we can not break them. And, you know, let's move on from there. I mean, and I do think it maybe is a platform that, I mean, if this had have done, you know, 185 million at the box office, I think you would have said, okay, so it's very clear where you go from here. They fixed Superman. You can maybe replace Ben Affleck's Batman still if you want to. But otherwise, you've kind of got the platform of these very basic sketches of these 5-6 characters that you can then continue to do films around and maybe weave in the new characters to this universe. The box office does throw a spanner in the works, though, I think.
I mean, I always think how after Avengers, like, Avengers did $1 billion, and then Iron Man 3 came out and also did $1 billion. Like, it inherited the Avengers audience. And to an extent, every film since has done that.
But this hasn't inherited Wonder Woman's audience.
This hasn't even inherited Wonder Woman's audience. Like, it's insane. Like, from a business perspective, like, if you can't bring in those people to see this sequel, who's seeing it? Like, why are you doing this? Like, all it had to do was retain that audience, if not build it. And it can't even do that. Like, why spend all the money on effort on doing this film if you're not going to make a shitload of money out of it?
But, well, I don't think it was on purpose, James.
Well, no, but, like, this is the conversation they're going to be having is, like, why aren't we just doing more films like Wonder Woman that stand alone and appeal to fuckloads of people? Like, why are we trying to put everyone in the same film and not do it?
Well, I think the box office implications for this film, they've come from the movies that have come before. They're not, it's not the fault of this movie or the marketing of this movie even, I don't think.
it's a little bit the fault of this movie, well, because they spent a lot of time marketing this as a film without Superman in it.
Yeah, but even not, you know, not convincing of that.
You know? I mean, I just think, like, I always think of my parents who, like, if they saw a film advertising with Batman and Superman in, they'd be like, oh, it's a Batman and Superman film.
Yeah.
Whereas they watch this and it's like, it's a Batman and 5 other people film.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's been a bizarre thing from start to finish, the whole Superman of it. But I do
think it's Superman in it and then putting him as literally the first shot.
I think the reason this film failed at the box office, though, was Batman v Superman, not Justice League itself. I mean, the reviews didn't help. I mean, we should talk about that. The
40% kind of, is it on now? 39?
Well, no, more I think the pre-release of not revealing the box office, the Rotten Tomatoes score until the day of release or the day before release, of literally Rotten Tomatoes making the decisions themselves to withhold that score until the day of release, even though the reviews have been submitted to the website, even though the individual reviews are out there elsewhere. And the reason why all that is so dodgy is because Time Warner is a minority owner of Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. I mean, as my friend said, like, the only thing rotten is Rotten Tomatoes.
It's like, it's unethical in the extreme.
Yeah. I mean, I can believe that they maybe didn't get someone from Warner saying, like, oh, hold back the score, please. But at the same time, it's too shady. The appearance of it is too shady to not be suspicious of it.
I mean, that's what your website exists for.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was incredibly disappointing. And I mean, any ideas that people thought there was some kind of conspiracy. I mean, you know, these crazy DC fans who think that, like, Rotten Tomatoes are marking reviews that are, like, seem like they're, like, borderline positive, negative, and marking them as rotten rather than fresh. You know, the fact that there could be any conspiracy there when Rotten Tomatoes are literally doing this for Justice League.
I mean, I checked the top critics, and the top critics thing is even lower. It's like 25 or something.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, I do you know what? I mean, like, it's one of those things, expectations-wise, I came out of this movie and was kind of like, I was like, it wasn't good, but it wasn't the clusterfuck I expected it could have been.
Well, this is something that I was saying to Mike literally just before we started the podcast, which was that, like, part of me came out of this movie going, oh, it wasn't Suicide Squad. But, like, Suicide Squad isn't the bar. Like, Avengers is the bar.
Yeah. And it's especially, like, if this was the first one, or if this had come, if this was in place of Batman v Superman, as you know, the one to follow up from Man of Steel and try and kick off this universe, then I think, you know, I think people would be more inclined to be a little kinder towards it because it could be more about finding its feet. The fact that this is the film should have built up to is it is a fine film, not fine as in that's a fine film. It's a film that's, yeah, it's fine. That's not good enough for what this film is supposed to be, and for what this film is promoted as being, and for what DC and Warner's and Zack Snyder and everybody have been talking about this film as being for the last, what are we on, like 4 years? When did Man of Steel come out?
But this wasn't, I mean, this universe began with, I don't care what anyone says, this universe began with Batman v Superman. So it's really only been 18 months.
This film was announced in October 2014.
So, well, yeah.
So it's been 3 years that this has been talked about as, oh, wow, you're going to get a Justice League movie. You're going to get to see the Justice League, and it's going to be amazing. And the thing about the Justice League, and this is, I'm going to get into a bit of a thing about DC and Marvel now, is that DC's main heroes, especially the Justice League, and especially if you're doing the, in inverted commas, Big Seven Justice League, you know, you don't have Martian Manhunter and Green Lantern.
Cyborg.
Post-New 52, he's part of that, apparently.
The big five and a half.
Yeah. You know, these are supposed to be the biggest. This is not supposed to be a team of rookie heroes finding their feet. These are supposed to be the greatest heroes in the world banding together to fight threats that nobody else could possibly fight alone. The tagline is, you can't save the world alone, and Superman pretty much does that at the end of the film. You can't save the world without Superman is what the tagline should have been. It's just, you could do a Justice League that was like this, because, you know, let's face it, Justice League International is my favourite version of that team. But this Justice League should be enormous, big mythology stuff. This film should have been bursting with too much stuff to fit in it, and too many ideas, and maybe not succeed at all of them, but with enough ambition and just ridiculousness thrown at it. You know, I would have preferred, as I said, it comes back to Batman v Superman, which I think does reach for too much and tries to do too much. And this just doesn't. And, you know, once again, I've come out of a DC film, and, like, I thought that I was having as this was coming towards the end. For as much as I liked some of the character stuff, and particularly The Flash, and I did like how it did Superman, I found myself thinking back to Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And a particular moment in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which is when you have that little montage towards the end, and there is a scene, there is that shot of Rocket and Star-Lord flying through the sky. It's a really, really brief moment, the two of them flying and smiling and laughing at each other. And that's one of the images that stuck with me the most out of that film. And the reason for that is that here are two characters who before, again, what year did Guardians come out? Was it 2014? Like, yeah, before 2014, I vaguely knew those characters existed, but I did not care about them at all and had no pre-existing knowledge. And then Guardians 2 can, you know, the second film with these characters can have just a little moment like that that just gets me right in the heart, because those films have made me love and care about those characters so much that I get that lovely bit of joy from that shot. This is Justice League. This is DC Comics. I've been reading DC Comics for nearly 30 years. And, you know, I probably first saw a Superman movie about 30 years ago. And I have been so invested in DC and the DC universe and DC's characters for all of that time. And I just don't care about this film. Apart from a couple of moments where I go, oh, Superman's there. I love Superman. Apart from that,
I mean,
how can these films not make me care when I'm so pre-
That is the thing, isn't it? Like, because you sit even in Avengers 2 and Thor Ragnarok and stuff, like, even in, like, the peripheral Avengers films, like, sometimes you get that moment where, like, it feels like your heart's going to burst out your chest because you're just, like, so excited by what's happening on screen. And in this, like, the film didn't make me feel anything for the majority of it, except occasionally when I was laughing at some of the stupider things that were happening.
But we know that DC aren't incapable. It's not like that the people... I mean, I think this is... Given that this is not, doesn't feel like a Zack Snyder movie, I can only imagine this is Zack Snyder done with DC. There are people working behind the scenes that are not incapable of making good DC movies because seen Wonder Woman.
Because Wonder Woman gave me that feeling, even though, like, again... I know almost nothing about Wonder Woman, but I came out of that film thinking, like, amazing. Like, that's what I wanted.
But this is what I mean about kind of wondering what they're going to do next. Because, I mean, when you look at this Batman with this tone and then remember that this is the same universe where Jared Leto's Joker exists, you go, how is that going to happen?
Do you know, it's funny you say that, because I did one of the, after this, not during it, but a little while after it, I was thinking along the lines of, okay, so this film has done a reasonable amount to rehabilitate this universe and this version, and maybe we could have some good stuff going forwards. And then I just went, oh no, hang on, in this universe, Jared Leto's the Joker.
You know, I actually...
It's not salvageable.
I actually had forgotten, because, you know, in that final scene in the cell?
Yeah.
Like, part of me thought, oh, are they going to turn it round and it's not going to be Luther, it's going to be the Joker? And at no point did I think, oh yeah, it's going to be Jared Leto.
By the way, was that a payoff from a scene at the end of Batman v Superman? Was there a... Was that the same guy from the end of Batman v Superman when Jesse Eisenberg was in the cell?
I think it might have been, yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to remember. I just remember so little in terms of the specifics of that
just
movie.
As soon as Jesse Eisenberg was back, I was like, oh yeah, it's the, like,
yeah,
it's him.
Do you wonder whether they're, like, so Deathstroke, we thought, was going to be the villain that they're introducing in the solo Batman movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the assumption. And, like, so do you reckon it's going to be that, like, Lex Luthor exists in the background now, almost like Thanos, and that if we do get around to, like, a Justice League 2, that, there will be this Injustice League, and it will be all of the villains that you see in between? Is that the idea, or what is the idea?
I guess
Deathstroke
that's
a Batman?
The idea. Is
he a villain for Batman, or is he a villain for something else? Is Lex Luthor going to show up in a Batman movie?
Well, like, for me, the way to have done Lex Luthor would have been to have had him as, like, Darkseid's liaison on Earth, like, messing around with forces he doesn't really understand but thinks he can comprehend or whatever.
Which felt like it was the original plan and
yeah,
has not...
like, the kind of Loki figure who is, like, straddling the line of, you know, interfacing all these different worlds. Like, because you can... There are plenty of reasons for Lex Luthor and Batman to clash. Like, that's not something you have to work hard at if, you know, within the context of the characters. And the same with any of the other superheroes. Like, he's got his fingers in enough pies, basically. but the, you know, they didn't actually use him in this film, and it seemed like, why take your most recognizable villain and your most formidable villain? Don't use him. Don't use the obvious alternative, which is Darkseid, and replace him with this like CGI monstrosity that no one cares about in any context. Well, like, character.
The question that all of those whys come back to, it has been hobbled together from one thing to another thing. And I don't think there has been, in terms of this actual film, too much forward planning, because I think anything that this film was supposed to set up, you know, it was originally a 2-part movie. It was announced as Justice League Part 1 and Part 2. And at some point they changed that. And so I imagine a lot of plans kind of got messed up.
Well, Seb, I'm interested actually. Because, like, if I was making a Justice League film, Lex Luthor would be the villain. But, I mean, like, if you... aside from Darkseid, who would be the villain? Like, who's the obvious fit?
I mean, Luthor is a good obvious fit because it's a good expansion of, like, kind of his hatred of Superman. I always like seeing Luthor in opposition to Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
And Luthor was quite recurringly a villain in Grant Morrison's JLA run. Other than that, I mean, you've got Starro the Conqueror, who is a giant space starfish that possesses people. I'm trying to think what other Justice League villains there really are. I would probably go with Luthor, but I wouldn't go with Jesse Eisenberg.
Do you think they're saving Brainiac for a Superman movie?
Potentially. This is the thing, they would be most likely Superman villains. I think you would use Darkseid as a Superman villain, Brainiac as a Superman. You wouldn't use Batman villains against the Justice League. You would have those larger
You could not have the Joker against the Justice League.
Ra's al Ghul.
He was
Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, potentially.
I mean, because then you could at least use like the Assassins or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, obviously what they're looking to build towards is having an Injustice Gang or an Injustice League. So that could be made up of the likes of Lex Luthor and, heaven forbid, the Joker, Deathstroke. You could look at sort of something like the Secret Six, maybe, which there's sort of a fair bit of crossover with Suicide Squad in terms of...
This is the thing, though. I just keep coming back to... I keep coming back to it, guys. Like... what do they do next? What do they keep? What do they get rid of? What is the slate? Is it just we drop the crossovers and we just have them existing independently?
I think the way to go is to just keep the strands as separate as possible for a few years until you know what's successful
and you know what's not successful.
Yeah.
But do you make a Ben Affleck Batman movie?
Christ, no.
No.
I mean, and like Flashpoint is a movie that they're making, which is all tied up in the universe of it all.
Yeah, good luck to him.
I mean, part of me wants to say you start again, but then they've got enough in this film that works, and the one thing you can't argue with is that Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman has to be in everything they do, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they can't... I think it's kind of like trying to turn like a steamship around or whatever, like a liner. Like, it's going to take him a while to get anywhere good. So maybe don't aim too high, like do it incrementally. Like do what Marvel did, make some individual films that are good before you try and cram everything together.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what the one thing that would have made me really excited in this film would have been, and that would have been if Harley Quinn showed up. Because that would have been like, oh, I wasn't expecting that, but it is quite cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows what's going to go on with what's going to happen with Suicide Squad? And
I tell you, I would like to see the next Superman film be a Superman and Harley Quinn team up.
They literally do just take the successful elements of the movies. I guess though, what this movie does prove is that nothing is beyond salvaging. Like, they've salvaged this version of Superman and made him into a character that we want to watch. I mean, do you know what? I think I've figured it out, finally, why I didn't really have a problem with the upper lip. And that's because when Henry Cavill turned back up on screen, I was transfixed at, oh God, I forgot about the chest hair, for one. and for two, I saw Chris Hemsworth shirtless in Thor. I saw his bum, in fact, in Thor Ragnarok. And he is a fine specimen of a man. Henry Cavill is huge. He's so big. And I just like...
quite bulgy, isn't he? Like, I was not prepared for that.
But I remember saying the same about the scene, you know, when he comes out of the water in Man of Steel. He's just a different level of big when it comes to these superheroes. And that's it. I think that's the one thing that I really loved about this movie was you believe that Superman is on a different level to everyone else. And I think that, you know, you kind of want to see what the threats are that come, back afterwards. You know, who are the threats that they come up with that can fight this version of Superman, this strength of Superman? Yeah. So that's
but it does rather render the whole concept of the Justice League kind of irrelevant. So I just leave it to Superman. It's funny that, you know, that's the complaint people always have about Superman, is always overpowered. But I always argue against that.
They forgot this to film fix kind it. Of,
yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's just Joss Whedon has just always been the guy arguing that. Like, Superman's not interesting because he could just beat anyone. And then he's gone.
No, we'll watch him do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, and I think we're just about done, but one final thing we probably should talk about before we get to the comic recommendations is the score. Junkie XL replaced by Danny Elfman, and there was some memorable stuff in there. And by memorable, I mean I've heard it before.
Yeah, you remember it from the previous films.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't use it in quite the way that they didn't use the Superman one in quite the way that I expected. It was just the sort of doing that darker, twisted version for when he comes back.
Well, they were like, so they were little motifs, weren't they?
Yeah. I kind of wonder why they bothered. It was the same with the Batman bit. It's like, oh, Batman when he's on a rooftop, which has actually reminded me, by the way, good work getting J.K. Simmons for that massively important role in this film for like two scenes on a rooftop.
I mean, Lawrence Fishburne didn't even get a look in, so.
But yeah, it's just like, oh, Batman's turned up and he's got the Danny Elfman Batman theme, in case you didn't know it was Batman. I just thought it was a bit... If they were going to do it, I'd rather they'd gone to coin the tagline, all in on it, and done it properly. I expected a proper, full, triumphant John Williams Superman when Superman...
Yeah, me too, and it just never materialised.
I thought, the Batman bit was weird because I was watching a scene that looked like it had come out of the Arkham games. Like, it looked like it...
I thought that, especially where he's got the grappling hook.
Yeah, it looked like it had come out of the last Batman game, but you were still at that point looking at the Zack Snyder, Frank Miller-ish version of Batman from the previous film. But then the Danny Elfman original Batman music was coming. I was like, what is this?
I do have another point about the soundtrack, though, which is that the Watchmen-esque opening montage used what is a fantastic choice of song for using in a movie like this and in a setup where the world has lost hope because Superman's dead. But why the fuck didn't they use the actual original Leonard Cohen version instead of a John Lewis cover version of it? It's a great song and the original sounds so good and it's really sort of driving and ominous. And they just have this horrible, horrible version instead.
Yeah.
If you've never heard the proper Everybody Knows by Leonard Cohen, go and listen to the album I'm Your Man, which is his weird 80s synthy album, and it's fantastic.
Okay, let's move on now to the comic book recommendations. James, what have you got for me?
Okay, I mean, I'm not the sort of person who reads a lot of JLA comics. Sorry, Justice League comics. They dropped the America, didn't they?
Yes.
Justice League of the entire world now. I've actually read more Justice League International on Seb's recommendations.
I think it's the JLEU, if you're...
Justice League of the Extended Universe.
Yep. So yeah, the only comic I feel capable of recommending you is actually quite an interesting one, and it is the JLA Avengers crossover. It's drawn by George Perez and written by Kurt Busiek, who did the Avengers comics I recommended to you way, way back in the past. And this was like a 4-issue intercompany crossover, which...
I've heard this. They'd pair off one character who then they fight.
Yeah, right? Basically. Right? I mean, yeah, basically. Like, the thing is, they started drawing it in, like, I think the 80s, was it, Seb? Do you remember?
It's, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, basically, sure they made part of it in the 80s, and then the deal fell apart, and then they came and finished it in the early part of this century. And in terms of getting, like, all the classic Avengers and Justice League characters in one comic and showcasing them, I think the reason it'll be interesting for you is it defines them in opposition to one another, and you're very familiar with the Avengers, and I think you'll be very familiar with everyone in the Justice League from the last sort of 40, 50 years by the time you finish that comic. It's not super long, but I think it's worth reading.
Brilliant. Seb, I imagine you've got something a lot more like traditional DC Justice League than that.
Well, it's funny because I thought James was going to do the obvious one, so I had a backup one. But I'm going to recommend you them both because they're both quite short and they're both by the same writer and they're both sort of in the same bit of continuity in the same era. So in 1997, Grant Morrison took over writing Justice League with a newly launched book that was simply called JLA. I think before the point before that was it had been Justice League International, and that had then, well, it had been Justice League, which then became Justice League International, and then split into Justice League Europe and Justice League America. Then when Giffen and DeMatteis finally left that book in around about, it was not long before kind of Death of Superman, so it was probably about 92, Dan Jurgens, who was also writing Superman, took over and had some of the same characters, but turned it into a little bit more of a kind of trad superhero. Like, a lot of the humour was gone, but it still had the likes of like Guy Gardner and Fire and Ice and stuff in it. So that run kind of wound down. I don't know if what writers they had on after Jurgens, but it sort of limped along. And what was clear was that the JLA kind of needed a shot in the arm and sort of to be restored as the big heavyweight superhero team. So Grant Morrison came on board, and the remit was basically, these are actually the seven most powerful characters. It's, you know, the big seven, the originals. So it's Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Aquaman, Green Lantern, who was Kyle Rayner at this point, and Martian Manhunter. And, you know, it was about tackling the big threats and sort of, you know, they almost kind of come together by accident because there is actually an existing Justice League at this point. And who I think Superman is a member of, but the other characters are all pretty much nobodies. And they sort of get badly beaten by this new threat that comes along. So a new Justice League gets formed almost by accident just to kind of deal with the emergency. And at the end of that first arc, they decide to sort of become the new permanent Justice League. So the first, I'd suggest reading the first four issues of that, which is the first arc, which I think is called New World Order. I will warn you that the art's not very good. It's by an artist called Howard Porter, who is a lot better these days than he used to be, but his 90s style is, it's very 90s, basically, and it's not always clear what's going on. But I think you'll get enough of a sense of it. So given that you've only got four issues of that, you could carry on and read a bit more of the Morrison JLA run if you like it. If you are going to carry on, I will warn you that after issue four of JLA, in Superman's own comic, he got transformed into an energy-based version of himself and got a new costume. It was a big controversial thing at the time.
Electro suits.
One of those comic stories that actually made the mainstream press when the mainstream press thought it might be permanent when it obviously wasn't. So that's not explained in the pages of JLA. He just suddenly becomes energy suit Superman from issue five. So be warned of that if you do decide you want to carry on and read the Morrison stuff. There's an arc, which I'm not specifically recommending for this because it's a bit heavy and doesn't always work, but issues 10 through to 15 is called Rock of Ages, and there's a lot of stuff to do with kind of the new gods and stuff in that, and the villains, the main villains in it are Luther and the Joker. So it's a big old, it's the kind of thing we were just talking about in terms of villains that the Justice League could fight. But actually, rather than that, that's a long, me talking a long roundabout way about something I'm not necessarily saying you should read, but I'd really like to recommend JLA Earth 2, which is basically, it was a standard, it was done as a standalone, I don't know if it was a graphic novel or a miniseries, but it's collected as a graphic novel, and it's written by Morrison, and it's that Justice League team, so it's that same team lineup, But it involves them fighting an alternate universe version of themselves. This was at a point when DC didn't officially have the multiverse. The multiverse hadn't been brought back. It's post-crisis. And this established that there's another Earth with villains on. It's essentially the old, it's like the old style slash current style Earth 3, where you have Ultraman and Superwoman and Owlman as a kind of villainous Injustice League.
Right.
Lex Luthor's also quite prominent in it. It's drawn by Frank Quitely, so it's a it's an early Morrison and Quitely collaboration, so it looks fantastic. And it's just a really great Justice League standalone story. I think it's the best thing Morrison wrote about the Justice League. And one of the best things he did at DC full stop, actually. I think it's absolutely fantastic. But I think you'd be well served reading the four issues that set up that team before you then go on to a story that was published 3 or 4 years later that's that team kind of at the height of their powers, if you see what I mean. And Superman is not Electric Blue Superman at this point. He's back to classic style Superman. I would have liked to see Frank Quitely draw Electric Blue Superman. That would be fun. but yeah, so JLA, New World Order, and Earth 2. It's probably about 6 to 8 total issues worth of comics. So enjoy that.
Excellent. Okay. We'll move on now to our final section, which is the pitch. And as usual, we're kind of sticking with something closely related to the film we just saw. And this week, guys, I thought I would leave you a kind of a big amount of latitude with how you want to interpret this and what you want to do with it. I want to know who would be your ideal lineup in the next Justice League movie. So that could be a sequel to this Justice League. It could be something else entirely. It could be some recast actors. It could be whatever you want. So who would be your ideal lineup in the next Justice League movie? And Seb, I'm going to guess you've thought about this a bit more and you've got a bit more mental ammunition for who could be in a Justice League lineup. So I'm going to come to you first, and I'll leave James a little bit more time to work on his rebuttal.
Well, I might have done if we'd got this pitch earlier than a little while before we
got it. You got it like 2 hours before.
Yeah, but I've been busy.
Well, whose fault is that?
No, I did think... Shed. I did think about sort of... I actually just interpreted this as if you were doing a movie that was a follow-up to this. I kind of wish now I had the time to go away and actually think about a proper pitch for a proper brand new Justice League film with characters that I love and actors who I've identified to play them. I actually think pretty much all you need in the next Justice League film would be obviously Wonder Woman, because we know she's great. Superman, because I think he's been rehabilitated by this. The Flash, because I think he was pretty great. And the other character in Justice League, who I think is pretty much the most important out of the heroes in terms of how much they actually contribute to getting stuff done, which is Alfred. And I would make Alfred the centerpiece of the next Justice League film, because I'm pretty sure that nothing that they succeed in this film would actually happen if they didn't have Alfred sitting there directing everything from afar. And just generally being the moral core of the Justice League. So let's put Alfred front and centre and have the JLA, the Justice League of Alfred.
Amazing. I thought you were going to say Martian Manhunter. But I guess Alfred works fine. So wait, just to be clear there, we have Alfred, but we don't have Batman.
Yeah.
Perfect.
The only way I think they should have Batman is to recast him as Armie Hammer.
See, Armie Hammer was he the one originally
He was Batman in the George Miller one, but I think because he has existing chemistry with Henry Cavill as well, you could actually believe Batman and Superman were friends if Armie Hammer was Batman.
I mean, the rumor for ages is that Armie Hammer is the Green Lantern choice, so we'll see whether that ever comes to pass. But I mean, I'm shocked that a man whose name is Armie Hammer and looks like Armie Hammer does isn't a superhero yet. It's surely only a matter of time before one of them snaps him up. James, who is your ideal lineup in the next Justice League movie?
Okay, so we know when they make Justice League movies, they like to do it to spin characters out into their own franchises. So my pitch is replace the entire cast of this film with entirely new heroes who've not been used before. So I would have Batwoman, probably the John Stewart Green Lantern, Swamp Thing, Booster Gold, Zatanna, Shazam, and Power Girl.
Are they alongside the existing heroes, or is this a new team?
No, entirely new team.
Okay.
And I guess they're fighting, like, Harley Quinn.
Is that the version from this universe, or a brand new Harley Quinn?
No, yeah, same Harley Quinn. And Deadshot, if he's, you know, if Will Smith isn't too busy making Bright.
With David Ayer, who is now saying that, you know, Netflix is the place to work, you know, not like at DC where you
Yeah, and next he's going to be like, YouTube is the place to work, and then he's going to be like, community like cinema, Netflix. That's the thing. iPhones, it's all iPhones again.
It's funny, but I actually do have a lot of sympathy for the way he was treated at DC.
I thought that Bright was a parody, because it had Will Smith punching a fairy.
Yeah, that was an experience getting that trailer before, and knowing nothing about it beforehand, seeing that trailer before Justice League.
Okay, well, guys, you know how I normally like to, you know, come up with my own pitch and you know, tell you who what my answer to the question would have been. I'm not going to do that this time. Instead, I'm going to say what I think the answer will be, like who will be the lineup in the next Justice League movie that is released in cinemas. And I think that's going to be Lego Batman, Lego Superman, Lego Green Lantern, Lego Flash, Lego Cyborg, because there is no fucking way that we get another Justice League movie before they get to the Lego version. So that's my prediction. The win goes to Seb. Just because James came up with lots of random characters that I was just
they're
like,
all,
I don't think
they're
you...
all good.
I'm sure they're all good.
To be
but
fair, they just... were all good, and they were all ones that James actually likes. So James actually did the my type answer for this, given that it's a DC one, and I did the I can't think of anything. Let's give a joke answer.
I would like to say I also specifically chose people who would cover a variety of threats. Like, there's no expertise overlap. There's not like Martian Manhunter and Power Girl. There's only one superpowered flying alien on that team.
I feel like you didn't communicate that entirely in your.
I mean, it's
delivery.
Not my fault. Maybe if the audience doesn't pick up on it.
Hang on. What's Booster Gold's unique thing that he brings to the team?
He's a time traveler. Seb.
No. He time travels to get to where he is.
Yeah.
He's not regularly a time traveler.
Yeah.
He doesn't have time travel.
He's from the future. He has knowledge of the future, unlike all the other characters. I can't believe I have to explain this to you, of all people.
All of Booster Gold's powers are things that he's nicked from a superhero museum. By his very nature, everything that Booster Gold can do is something that another superhero can do.
Let's see him do what Swamp Thing does.
It's been a long time since we heard anything about the Booster Gold and Blue Beetle movie stuff, isn't it?
That's probably for the best. I mean, I would still like to see a good Blue Beetle and Booster Gold movie, but maybe when Brian Michael Bendis comes to DC and writes the Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle, they'll want to make a movie out of it.
I mean, we've been joking for so long about all the other studios that are going to make movies that aren't going to make movies. It looks like Gambit's going to happen, you know? It looks like Silver and Black's gonna. It looks like Venom's literally in production.
Yeah, but Morbius isn't gonna happen, so we've got that.
But I do wonder whether maybe we just need to, like, DC just throw out so much stuff that we just we're like, well, I guess if it comes about, it comes about. Do you think we ever see Joss Whedon's Batgirl? I mean, Joss Whedon's been brought in here as the like replacement.
That was supposed to happen.
Yeah, I just can't see a world where that exists now. I can't see a world where a bunch of these exist. It'll be fun. I mean, we're definitely not going to see all those Joker movies. I can tell you that for free. But I don't know which one we will see. Lego Joker. Again, Lego Joker is my prediction.
Oh, no, because he was the worst thing about that film.
But still.
Go back to our podcast to find out why I don't like Lego Joker.
It's the teeth, isn't it? It's the teeth.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, but that's it for this week's podcast. Before I get into the end spiel, Seb, you've had a spin-off of your own, haven't you?
Yes, I'll say unlikely, but it is quite popular. In the unlikely event that there's any crossover between people who like comic book movies, thus listen to this podcast, and who like the hit NBC sitcom The Office, I've started a new podcast called The People Persons Paper People, which will make sense if you've actually seen the show. I'm going back and watching The Office from the very beginning and doing a kind of 30, no more than 30 minute solo podcast on each episode and playing in clips so that it's not just my voice for the whole 30 minutes. It's kind of, you could listen to it if you are a newbie, you could watch the show along with it, but it is, I do kind of talk about the episode because it's a rewatch of something I've watched many times. So it's kind of talking about it in the context of what's to come and the show as a whole and looking back on how it works, especially in those early seasons. So if you like The Office, you might want to give that a listen. I did the first couple of episodes as a pilot, and a few people listened to it and said, yeah, this is all right. So I'm at least carrying on and doing the whole first season. And again, if a few more people listen to it and go, yeah, that's all right, then I will just carry on and do it as a long-term thing. So that's, yeah, People, Persons, Paper, People. You can find it at People, Persons, Paper... Is it... Edit this because I'm not sure which bit is in.
No, leave this in.
No, we definitely need to leave this in.
No, yeah, I did leave the off the URL. So you can find it at peoplepersonspaperpeople.podbean.com or if it's easier to remember, P4_podcast on Twitter. And yeah, if you like hearing me talk about things that I like, then go and give it a listen.
I had no idea you were such a big Ricky Gervais fan.
So he wrote one episode and is an executive producer. Actually, to be fair,
he turns up a few times, though, doesn't he? A
couple of times. And the episode that him and Merchant wrote is one of the best episodes of the show. Look, I discussed the conflict of my relationship with Ricky Gervais and his work in the podcast itself. So, yeah.
Good to know.
Is there any other admin we need to do? I forget.
Patreon.
Okay, well, so we'll stick that in there.
Yep.
Okay, well, if you're enjoying this show, then please do subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, or your podcast app of choice. And you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. And James, we have some people from Patreon, not paper people, just standard people who you'd like to thank.
Yep.
Some Patreon people.
Yeah, I'd like to thank recent pledges, Nicholas Rollins, Jason Smedley, and Brendan Rowan. And I just wanted to remind everyone as well that if you do subscribe to our Patreon, we are running monthly competitions at the moment where you can win actual new, like, crap that I've got lying around. by which I mean I've done some unopened action figures, and I think the next one is going to be a book that I was sent to review. So that'll be fun.
And I've also got some Superman comics that cleared out of my long box because I needed some space. So what we're going to do is chuck them in as a bonus prize for the first person who gets the main prize and would also like some comics.
Yeah,
so,
and also
if you don't want them, we won't throw them in. But in the first person who does, we will throw.
I will also be raffling off the actual Aquaman wristband that I got free from the Odeon and wore while I watched Justice League.
Wow. also on Patreon, we have since we last spoke, which I think was a little while ago that we did a Patreon update because James was... Oh, no, James, you were on Ragnarok. It was Incredibles you weren't on. Anyway, we've smashed through not one but two of our separated by $10 targets for bonus episodes. So the first one means that James is doing, and I think has already recorded, a bonus episode ranking the entire MCU so far. So it might be fun to listen back to previous podcasts and see if you can guess what that order is before James actually...
How much my opinion has changed with time.
Yes. And the second target means that I have to do an episode explaining every major continuity reboot that DC Comics have done in the last 70
I mean, that's
years.
That's going to be so a really helpful... It's going to be a helpful resource for them, I think.
Yeah.
Someone should. So
those bonus episodes are exclusive to Patreon backers. If you want to hear them, if you like the sound of them, feel free to sign up to the Patreon so that you can hear them. James's one will be up soon. I'm going to aim to get my one done before Christmas as well. It might take me until then just to actually get around to describing them all. But that one will be on there, and I think we're about $7 or $8 away from an episode where Joe... has to try and make sense of the DCEU, taking a detailed look at the announced and rumoured plans for the movies and how it might all fit together, which I think has probably somewhat changed in premise since Justice League.
Jesus Christ, when did I agree to that?
A long time ago. And we've got some further ones beyond that will involve James talking about his top Marvel crossovers and me talking about my top DC crossovers. If we somehow manage to hit all of those, we'll stick a load more possibilities for bonus episodes as well. So if you'd like to hear us doing more bonus episodes, then come and give us money on Patreon, and it helps to keep this thing going.
Yeah, and I will just, at this point, throw in some podcast admin. Apologies for the lack of minisodes over the last couple of weeks, or over the last month, basically. I have unhelpfully started a job in the last couple of months where I work in marketing, in TV and radio marketing, in the build-up to Christmas, which means I've been working very long days and have struggled to actually sit down and read the comics and keep up with the comic book news. Like, I get texts like, oh, what do you think about that? And I was like, God, I don't know, I've just slept and worked, that's all I've done. So I am going to do all of those eventually. We're potentially going to be tweaking our minisode plan though in the upcoming weeks. So we will have regular content, but maybe it's slightly different format.
And it's very nearly time for our end of year awards, which I'm sure we're all looking forward to enormously.
I can't wait for our end of year awards. I think we're going to have a full on fight about the best movie of the best new movie potentially. There's lots of fun stuff to get to. And who will win the Howard T. Duck Award for Best Bad Movie this year? Which I think is my new favourite category.
Could be this, actually.
I was going to say.
Yeah, very possibly. Well, one nominee confirmed.
Nice.
Okay.
It's not going to be Amazing Spider-Man 2, is it?
Was that this year? Oh, God. Yeah, no, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's been a long year, you guys. Okay. What else is left to be said? I know what's left to be said. You can find more episodes of the show at cinematicuniverse.com. You can get in touch via Facebook, on Twitter, @cine_verse, or send us an email to editorial@cinematicuniverse.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
You look at them and see the defenders of the world. All I see is my dad wearing tights. Cinematic Universe returns in 2 weeks' time with Sky High.